Hello, this is Dr. Laura Hannes-Webb of VisionarySoul.com, author of The Gift of ADHD and Listening to Depression, here today for the Sweet Spot program. Your sweet spot is where your passion meets your purpose, and this show is committed to helping you find, embrace, and live in your sweet spot. You can find us online at iTunes, at sweetspotpodcast.com, at psychjourneypodcast.com. But today, I'm very excited and very honored to be interviewing Dr. Bernie Siegel about his latest book, 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, Daily Messages of Inspiration, Hope, and Love. And he hardly needs any introduction. He's the best-selling author of Love, Medicine, and Miracles, Prescriptions for Living, and Peace, Love, and Healing. So welcome, Dr. Siegel.
Thank you very much, Laura.
Well, this is a fun book to read, and I really love this idea. Before we get into some of the specific prescriptions, can you tell us a little bit about this idea? Do you really think that changing some of the ways that we live our life and our relationships could affect our health?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean, you know, the reason I'm laughing, I could now spend an hour telling you stories. But
oh, I want to hear them.
What I've learned is that when people learn and accept that they're mortal, I mean, we should all know it.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to die someday. But what happens is we let others impose upon us a life that we don't really want.
Mm.
You know, what did mom and dad want you to be? You know, and it's just all the authority figures tell you what to be. And then, well, I think of a drawing immediately by a woman that said, "Will the real me please stand up?" And she draws one figure split down the middle. One side is mommy me, the other professional me.
Wow.
And you don't need to be a psychotherapist to tell her, go home and be with your kids.
Yeah.
I mean, that part, half of the picture is beautiful. And the other is, you know, black and sad. So, you know, if she learned she had cancer, what do you think she would do? I'm going home, you know. And Monday morning, may I have more heart attacks, strokes, suicides, and illnesses. So that tells you very well that your life and your health go together. And a big part of what I see is, and why I've kept doing this for 30 years, that when people learned that they were going to die and then really started living, they had what Solzhenitsyn termed in his book Cancer Wards, cases of self-induced healing.
Wow.
Okay? Not recovery through treatment, but actual healing. And the term he used to describe it in his book was, it was like a rainbow-colored butterfly fluttered out of the great open book, and all the men, you know, they were all patients, held up their foreheads and cheeks for its healing touch. And see, he's saying that too. What's a rainbow? It's a life in order. Mm. Every color represents an emotion, literally.
Wow.
And the butterfly is a symbol of transformation. So you rebirth yourself. I mean, what I've come to is the understanding of being born again. Why that, you know, comment comes up in myths, fairy tales, religions, and everything else, that you rebirth yourself, create the true self, and then you don't lose your life, you save it. Now, again, could these people still die? Of course.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when somebody's told you'll be dead in 2 months and starts living her life, a letter to me ends with, "I didn't die, now I'm so busy, I'm killing myself. Help, where do I go from here?" I told her to take a nap, you know.
Yeah.
You see, she's burning up, not out.
Yes.
And that's the key, that you can get tired. See, what's fascinating, when you talk, I love talking to kids and going to schools and, you know, sharing with them the same workshop I'd share with people, you know, adults with life-threatening illness. And the kids, believe me, are right there. You know, when you say you're as smart as a fifth grader, that's no joke.
Mm-hmm.
Because you say to the kids, what day of the week's bad for your health? And they yell Saturday and Sunday. Matter of fact, I was giving a lecture, and one of my grandchildren was there. And I said to this audience, because it was a health day at, you know, place of employment. So I particularly brought up, what day of the week's bad for your health? And Sam yells out, Saturday! And his father is so embarrassed. No, Sam, shh. I said, no, Sam, that is perfect. Thank you. I said, because he thinks Saturday, and other kids will yell Sunday, are bad for your health, because that's when they get exhausted. You know what I mean? They're out playing, running, doing, and they get tired.
Yeah.
See? So they take a nap. You get up, you feel better. Mm-hmm. But adults are burning out Monday. Yeah, as our tragic day. And the kids see life very differently. And that's what I tell everybody. Hey, You know, let the kid in you come alive. Be the child. Be the, or the animal, you know, your dog or cat. I mean, they don't worry about next year. They're trying to have a nice day.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like one of the prescriptions you have, you call Louie Louie, and it's about...
Oh, yeah.
It's about this idea that what you're saying, that Monday is the worst day if you're kind of going through your life on, you know, the default button. Right. And what did you mean? You tell the story about Louie, the film director, and what message do you have for those of us who have, or those who are kind of dozing off?
Do you remember what one that was?
Yeah, that was 164.
All right, let me, because I got the book. See, just so people know, there's a true story. When I went to college, there was a theater in town. This was up in Hamilton, New York. I went to Colgate. And Louie was the name of the guy who did the projection, you know, and showed the films. And it was obvious he, most of the time, didn't pay attention. He'd put the thing in and either doze off or go somewhere. And so he would have the thing playing, in the wrong order or all kind of, and so everybody would yell, or was out of focus. You'd start yelling, "Focus, Louie, focus." And to me, that was the key, you know.
Yeah.
Focus. What's your, you know, focus on. But again, as I've said here, if you focus on what you're worried about, think about what you do to yourself. If you live in fear, what do you do to yourself? See, it's physiologic. We're talking science, immune function, stress hormone levels are all going to change. But if you focus on your potential, see, what good could come? What might happen? That's how I was brought up, which I didn't appreciate as a kid because I thought my mother was avoiding my problems. You know,
wow.
Honey, do what will make you happy. God is redirecting you. Something good will come of this. But I realized later she was a therapist. You know, she changed my view of the future. Because, again, you see, if you focus on, oh, look what's happened to me. I've lost my job. I have a disease. But what if you said, hey, let's see. What will happen next year? So there are times, again, or even telling you I went to Colgate University, you know, I thought, what would impress people more if I told them I was going to Harvard? But what I learned was going to Colgate was a lot better for me because I had skipped a couple of grades, was really an immature college student. Even at Colgate, the guy said, I think you ought to go to prep school for a year. I said, no, I don't want to spend more time in school. Mm-hmm. But again, if I'd been in a big city, big college, I think I would have been lost. And here I was in a small town where everybody knew me, you know, roughly 1,000 students. So the professors became like fathers to you and took care of you. And again, I began to realize, you know, my mother's right. See, my choice might have been someplace else, but this worked out better for me.
So it's a message that for anyone who's going through, one of the other things you quote is Hemingway, who says, you know, everyone gets broken in life,
yep.
But some people become stronger in the places that they were broken, that in those times when you feel like you're broken, you know, there could be a deeper meaning behind it.
Right.
But you also make...
Let me add this.
Yeah.
I mean, part of why I write the book is so people could learn before they get broken.
Yes, that's the
feeling. And that's what I'm always saying to people. Learn
medicine.
From the wisdom of the ages, you know, who all the people who have preceded us and what they've told you. Look for common themes about surviving. So you'll find the Buddha says the same thing that somebody at an AA meeting tells you. And you say, hey, it works. That's why it's in the Bible at an AA meeting or Siegel wrote about it or something else, because we all realize this works.
And, I mean, the thing that's fascinating is that if it's true that everyone gets broken and we go through those places where we're broken, if we have these kind of prescriptions for the soul, we may prevent ourselves from having our problem turn into a health catastrophe.
Yeah.
And so we just look at the problem rather than the fallout of not handling it well.
Yeah, that's why I say that, you see, you have to understand this. The physiology. If a rabid dog ran into your office, you'd leap up on the desk, you know, maybe even jump up and hang from the chandelier, you know, do things, and you'd say, my God, how did I manage to do that?
Yeah.
Because I couldn't have done it. Well, you did it because the fear changes your internal environment. You know, it's trying to protect you. So your heartbeat, your muscle strength, all these things. But if every day you go to your office thinking a dog could come in, Yeah, you're more likely to come down with the flu, cancer, or something else because you're wearing your body out.
Yeah.
Trying to protect you. And that's why if you move into love, into peace, then your body goes into growth and healing. And that's the part, again, that I saw, that literally, I know people who said, I'm going to go home, leave my troubles to God, and their cancers disappeared. You'd say, how can they? It's the peace that comes, you know, that comes with it. And, again, these are people who are not trying to avoid dying, you see. I mean, one landscaper I wrote about, he became really one of my teachers. Because when I said to him, you need more treatment, I couldn't cure you with surgery, he said, no. It's springtime. Going to go home, make the world beautiful, so when I die, I leave a beautiful world.
Wow.
To make a very long story short, the only time I saw John again was 4 years later. I thought he was dead. He didn't come back to the office. And I told the nurse, he's dead. We must have two people with the same name. But she said, open the door to the examining room. So I opened the door, and John was sitting there telling me he had a hernia from lifting boulders in his landscape business. And he lived to 94.
Wow.
With no sign of cancer. Now, you'd say, how could that be? And when I say that, I mean, I can show you the slides, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We have the pathology report. I operated on him. This is not an error in diagnosis or a mistake.
Right.
And but it was the life he lived. And what I've learned is that a sentence that comes out of a poem by John Updike says, your body loves you. And I put that in one of my books, How to Live Between Office Visits, but the whole poem. But I had to read it a few years later to really feel a wallop from that line. Your body loves you. But my thought was, yeah, but what if I don't love my life and I don't love my body? What does it do? I mean, your body would see death as a convenience. You don't like your life. You hate getting up and going to work. Fine. We'll have a heart attack. Then you don't have to go to work anymore. So, you know, a way of finding peace is through death.
Mm.
And that's why when a lot of people say, oh, I just want peace, I say, let's define what you're talking about.
How are we going to get that peace?
Yeah, so that your body gets the right message.
Yes, got
it. Know, and doesn't say, okay, I'll end your life. You won't have anything to worry about.
Mm. And I think one of the messages you give in this book and is one of the learnings is when you talk about that peace, I think that some people have this idea that, you know, it may be like a button you click and all of a sudden you have this peace for the rest of your life. But your book gives this message that it's a practice.
Yeah.
And that even if you have those moments of, aha, I see the light, that you'll probably have to go back and do it again the next day to figure out how to do that. And you make this kind of play on your, you know, four times a day or as needed or TID, QID. Can you explain that?
Yeah, it's because I think what you said is very insightful. That, and what I mean by that is if you put a performer on a stage and you say to them, you know, perform a comedy, then their immune function increases, stress hormone levels go down. Put them in a tragedy, the opposite happens.
Mm-hmm.
But so what you realize is, yes, you're affected by how you behave, but also when you're a performer or an athlete, you have to practice and rehearse to accomplish what you want.
Yeah.
And in that case, you don't see the director or your coach as being mean and nasty when they criticize you. You see, they're trying to make you a better performer.
Mm-hmm.
So I always say to people, yes, practice, rehearse and practice, show up for practice and tell people it's okay to be critical. Give me feedback if I'm not living the life I was supposed to live. One man I thought was adorable, what he and his wife did, he came up to me and he had a pin on the word attitude. And he gave me one and he said, I have cancer and my wife will walk up and say, take the pin, give it a twist, and say, honey, you got to straighten out your attitude.
Mm.
And that was her way of letting him know he's not practicing what he should be practicing, you know, survival behavior. But it was, again, a lovely way that didn't upset him and, you know, showed her affection for him. And I've learned that people who are criticized regularly, this may sound crazy, but how do you know a good doctor criticized by patients, nurses, and family? Why? Because they're learning from their mistakes. And I'd say the same about a plumber, you know, that if you listen when you don't do a job right and don't blame the house or the person, you know, whose house it is, or say to a patient, you're the only one who ever complains.
Mm.
No, you say thank you, apologize, learn from your mistake, and move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you've got coaches all around you while you're practicing. And I also say, with a sense of humor, have a role model, you know, WWLD. And the two I have are what would Lassie do or what would Lucy do, see? So if you're feeling depressed, and believe me, this has worked for so many women who come back to me and say thank you. I say, look, I know you're depressed, but tomorrow when you wake up, act like I love Lucy, you know, Lucille Ball. And, you know, I'll get calls saying, you know, I'm sitting in the corner, you know, with family or at a party and feeling depressed, and then I remembered the be Lucy, and I got up, and I had a wonderful evening. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And so that, again, just these little techniques or phrases to as a practice to stay in that place of peace so your body doesn't start getting the message
yeah.
that, you know, there's a, you know, there's another way out.
And I'd say also to be a tolerant and accepting of yourself, you know, that when you do mess up halfway through the day, calm down, okay? Just take a step back and start again rather than, oh, terrible, you know, the guilt, shame, and blame. Because I think where this really fits for most people are those who have grown up without love. If you grow up with love, you're a multiple personality who doesn't worry about what everybody else thinks, who has a child in them that's enjoying life, that isn't afraid of relationships.
Mm-hmm.
When you grow up without love, or worse, I mean, not just indifference, which is the opposite of love, but rejection and abuse, yeah, you're in big trouble because you're afraid of relationships because all you heard from your parents was what a terrible person you were and a failure, and you embarrassed them and worse. And I think, you know, the violence we read about is because people were rejected.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're seeking revenge, and many of them end up killing themselves because then they feel guilty after what they've done. But if you grow up with love, you're in a very different place, and you're not afraid to step out. So I'd say to people, abandon your past. Forget what the authorities have told you, the parents, the teachers, the clergy, the doctors, and see yourself as a divine child. And literally, if you have baby pictures, get them and put them up where you work and where you live. And, you know, honor that child.
Mm-hmm. Mm. That's beautiful. And so, again, in these 365 prescriptions that have, you know, that address a lot of things in terms of also one you have is called Dolphins as Healers, and this idea of, you know, community and taking care of people and how even simple things like working together and cooperation are, you know, powerful strategies for healing. You know, I'm often struck by that this, again, that it seems like something that is happening in our social life could actually create specific and life-threatening health problems. Can you
yeah.
give some examples or stories about that?
I'm not sure you mean by social life, but I'll just go back to my own personal history and my wife's, that she had 5 children, which included twins, in 7 years. And we both got sick. And that's part of what woke me up as a doctor. I mean, we're totally exhausted, sleeping 3 or 4 hours, you know, caring for all the kids, getting things ready, and working, and on and on. And it became obvious to me that our exhaustion led to our illness. You know, our bodies were just unable to resist disease. And so I began to ask patients the same thing. You know, do you have another child? Did you move? Did you get a new job? And they'd say, how'd you know that?
Mm.
I'd say, well, it happened to me. See, I didn't know how to help them at that point
yeah.
in terms of what do you do, you know, with your life. But it's very obvious. And Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, at that time in my life, I was at one of her meetings, and you know, angry as hell, especially as a doctor. You know, I should be able to fix everything.
Yeah.
I was mad as hell, and she said to me, Bernie, you have needs too. And that sentence has stayed with me my entire life. You know, it wasn't about rage and hate and anger. It's you have needs too.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, I can always hear her saying that to me. And so, you know, when I start making noise because I have needs that aren't being met, the family knows, you know, they know I love them and they
yeah.
love me, but they know that my anger and my noise is I need help. I need you know, the things to change. I don't like how I'm being treated or what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so even, I think it's, as you talk about it, it seems like straightforward common sense, but it's amazing how a person can go into a doctor's office and say, well, you know, I have this and this going on, and it's just a knee-jerk reaction. Well, here's your prescription.
Yes.
And when, if you actually look at the context of a person's life, you think, my God, it's amazing you've gone this long without a problem. Why don't we start looking at making the changes in your life?
What you need is to treat the experience, and doctors don't understand that.
Mm.
I mean it, our training. It's slowly changing, but it's so far behind where it should be because of the technology. And again, the technology is wonderful. I know people who are alive because of it, but we have forgotten the people and gotten involved in technology. There's an ad that appeared in the New England Journal of Medicine a few years ago that I got them to cancel because it said, I'm depressed, unable to cope. I went to see my physician. He prescribed an antidepressant. I feel wonderful now. And I wrote to the pharmaceutical company in the New England Journal of Medicine. I said, this is your response. My family's killed in an accident. I'm depressed. And you don't even ask me what happened. You give me a pill. And so they canceled the ad. But that's the sick part. And what I've learned is if you say to people, what are you experiencing?
Right.
From a headache to a life-threatening illness, the words that come out of them are about their life.
Right.
The other night I said to a young woman who learned she has cancer, her words were turmoil and confusion.
Mm.
Say, okay, let's work on the turmoil and the confusion in your life. Help heal your life. Now, there are a few people who say, you know, gift, wake-up call, and a blessing, and a new beginning. But for most, it's failure, roadblock, draining, pressure. And those are the things we work on. See, then the disease, in a sense, becomes a gift. The way I put it is the curse becomes a blessing.
Yeah.
Because now, just the way hunger gets you to go get something to eat, you don't like how you feel, you nourish yourself. See? And in survival behavior, one of the questions, because I have a list, matter of fact, on my website, Bernie Siegel, S-I-E-G-E-L, M-D, there's a list of questions, immune competent personality.
Oh.
One is, am I able to express anger appropriately in defense of myself?
Mm-hmm.
You see, so the sweet little kid who's making mommy and daddy happy and internalizes anger is far more likely to come up with an illness than the devilish little twin sister who's doing her thing and making everybody crazy.
Wow.
And another study, well, two more. One, laughter. Cancer patients who laugh live longer, okay? And again, it's what's the physiology that happens within you when you laugh? I mean, everybody knows how they feel after they laugh. You feel better, yeah. The other is that loneliness affects the genes which control immune function.
Wow.
So then now you begin to see how what I was criticized for becomes scientific. Because I would say to people, what's happened last year or two in your life? Oh, he blames his patients for being sick. No, I'm asking them what might have made them vulnerable. You see,
mm-hmm.
You know, my spouse dies, my kids leave home, I lose my job. Okay, let's look at how that can make you vulnerable at this moment. And it's not about guilt, blame, and shame, but that comes up for a lot of people, again, because of how they're raised. They're blamed for everything that goes wrong, right? Rather than see it. Well, I love using this because there are members of the clergy who, when people say, does God want me to have cancer, say yes.
Wow.
Or not necessarily.
Mm.
But it may be that God wants you to have cancer, so you'll become more spiritual and get closer to God.
Mm.
Now, what I say to those clergy is, you go to your car and you can't find your car keys. Do you walk home? And if they said to me, of course, I'd walk home. That's a message from God. I'd say, okay, then at least you're living the sermon. But if they said to me, Siegel, don't be ridiculous, I'd look for my car keys. I'd say then if a patient comes in who is sick, tell them they have lost their health and they're not being punished by God and you're going to help them find it.
Wow, that's powerful.
Yeah, and
wow.
That's the way it should be.
Yes. Wow, I think that's such a better model of, okay, I've lost it, let's go solve some problems that are connected
right.
to my real life. And then just before we end, one of the things also that you talk about in there, and as a therapist, it's something that I hear people say very casually and flippantly, And when I hear it, it alarms me. And you talk about this phrase where people say, "Yo, yeah, this is killing me." And and you say that, "Whoa, that's a warning signal."
Yeah, absolutely. Because the biblical line is, "He who seeks to save his life will lose it." So when you say, "I'll make this marriage work if it kills me," or whatever,
right?
You're allowing things again to be imposed on you. You know, it can be parents telling you what they want you to do, your life, your spouse, your job, whatever. Then you're losing your life.
Mm-hmm.
And what I say to people is, what follows that line is, he who's willing to lose his life will save it. But what you lose is the untrue self. You lose what's killing you.
Right.
That's what you eliminate. I have a friend, a mafia friend that I grew up with in New York, Carmine.
Is it really mafia?
And he says there are four ways to solve a problem. How to eliminate problems. And he's not a violent man when he says eliminate. He says, look, if something's affecting your health, then you get it out of your life. So if you said, I'm in a job or a marriage that's killing me, you walk out, you know, get a divorce, cancel the contract, or tell the other person to leave. But if it's not affecting your health, then ask yourself, if I brought love into this situation, what would it do? And believe me, love is a weapon. Kill with kindness, torment with tenderness. That when you tell people who are driving you crazy, I love you, they don't know what to do. I mean it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done this, believe me. People screaming at me for various reasons, from taking a parking space or something. You know, they just get wild and violent over something. And you look out at them and say, I love you. Mm. They always turn and leave.
Wow.
And let me just add two more stories that, because again, when you talk about the violence we keep reading about, a minister said, a man walked up to her wearing a ski mask, grabs her pocketbook, and she said to him, I know behind that mask is someone you could love.
Wow.
He dropped her pocketbook and ran away. 5 years later, he came into her church and said, I want to thank you. I'm the man who took your pocketbook. And you said that you could love me. And I want to thank you for what you did for me. And the other was a grandmother who has this guy come through the window into her apartment, you know, to rob her.
Wow.
And she's sitting there. What does she do? She said, you know, you look tired. You look hungry. Sit down. Let me make something for you. I mean, he ended up marrying her niece.
Oh,
he became family, you know. And you'd say, well, who could do that? How can... All I can say is love is a weapon, and if you use it, it's amazing. I became what I call chosen dad for a lot of people now, and I didn't make up the term.
Yeah.
A young lady who was suicidal said to me one day, you're my CD. I said, what are you talking about? I'm a CD. She said, you're my chosen dad. And wow. And what I realized was that because I had shown her that I loved her. Now, it doesn't mean I had to like what she was doing, you know, in terms of her health and life, but I let her know that I loved her, and that's what changed her life. You know, see, now it's not indifference and rejection. This guy puts up with me no matter what I do, and I must be worth something. So when I go speak at schools, I love just looking at the kids and saying, well, you know, I'm here because I love you, and if you need a father, call me.
Wow.
And they go home knowing that I care. And you don't get 500 phone calls from 1,000 high school students who are very much, I may add, into suicide because they don't know how to straighten out their lives because of what parents and others are doing. And what I mean by that is if you say to the kids, write a suicide note and write a love note, why you should commit suicide, why you're worth loving. The suicide notes are 3 to 5 pages long, and the love notes are barely a page.
Wow.
And it helps the kids, though, because they talk to each other.
Yeah.
And so the suicide rate literally goes down when you do that because they realize I'm not the only one. And then we talk to each other and feel better, and it empowers them.
Wow, that is powerful work. Well, Dr. Siegel, can you tell our listeners where they can find your book and more about your website and what kind of resources you have there?
Yeah, I mean, the books are out now in all the, you know, the bookstores. And you can also order them through my website, the Bernie Siegel, you know, the www.BernieSiegel, SIEGELMD.com. I have a lot of articles there that people can enjoy reading, too, because one of the things, like waging a war against cancer, you know, you empower your enemy.
Mm-hmm.
What does every woman want? I mean, understanding why we have a world that's not perfect. So, yeah, these are a lot of things I struggled with as a physician because you don't discuss them in medical school. And then you're out there caring about people and pain. So there are a lot of issues from the medical perspective, too. But I think if people go there, they can look at my schedule, our support groups, articles I've written, and can even order books directly through it.
Absolutely. And the latest book, 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, I mean, I just think it's great preventative medicine if you don't have a chronic or acute problem.
Yeah, don't wait, right.
Yeah, go get it.
It, you know, one of the things why I like being on programs because, you know, almost invariably I'm told we're running out of time. And I say to people, don't ever forget that. We're all going to run out of time. So enjoy your lifetime.
That's a great point. That's a great point. Well, it's been such an honor to talk with you.
Thank you.
Okay, take care, Dr. Siegel.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.